Welcome back to the Bama Beat. I'm Ben Jones here with Cecil Hurt and Taren Walk. We're going to talk about what we've learned from spring practice, get you guys ready for A-Day this weekend. Also, just some other general football news. Cecil, how are you doing?
Great. How are you?
I'm good. Taren, thanks for joining us.
You're welcome.
Okay. So
I'm doing well. Thanks for asking.
We are going to talk about spring practice here. This is not exactly related to spring practice, but it came up during spring practice over the weekend. After Alabama's second scrimmage of spring, Cecil asked Nick Saban a question about players who choose to go out after their sophomore or junior seasons and how that kind of affects the roster, how it affects the guys that they do have in for spring, which launched Nick Saban into a four-minute, not quite a rant, but a four-minute soliloquy, a sidebar.
'Twas not a rant.
A strange interlude. Perhaps. If anyone watches the Marx Brothers, they know what a strange interlude is.
The best part of it was where, and Taren was there and Taren heard it, where Nick said, well, I don't really look at it that much, but.
Well, actually.
Then proceeded to spend half the press conference.
Statistics, yeah. You know, breakdown of every single.
Flat out numbers.
Draft position, throwing out numbers.
But it's like he'd been waiting for that question.
No, because he actually talked about, he said that same storyline without calling out a certain player at Pro Day. He actually, and of all places, Pro Day, where you have a bunch of juniors working.
Yeah, and the reason I asked about it, although the draft is upcoming in a couple of weeks, but it really didn't have anything to do with the draft. It was that he had come in and talked about how they have experienced guys who are doing well, but they have inexperienced guys that they've just got to really coach up and so forth. Well, they have less experienced guys than you would have had 10 years ago. You might have one or two guys go pro. Now, six or seven go pro.
Right.
That's, you know.
I'm going to read a portion of what he said. We have a transcript of it here.
Careful. If you read the whole thing, it's over 650 words.
Yeah, I'm not going to read the whole thing because no one wants to listen to me read 4 minutes of what Nick Saban talking has to say. It might be a minute or two, though.
It was not.
He said, I think in the last 5 years, not counting this year, there's been 380 or thereabouts go out for the draft, and 25% of those guys didn't even get drafted. And another 25% weren't on the team in 3 years. So that means 50% of the guys that went out early for the draft had failed grades. But if you look at the number of guys that were first and second round draft picks, there were very few guys that had failed careers. Now we have guys that have no draft grades, seventh round grades, free agent grades, fifth round grades that are going out to the draft. And the person that loses in this is the player. If you're a third round draft pick, and we had one here last year, I'm not going to say any names, although Ronnie Harrison, I believe, was Alabama's only underclassman who was chosen in the third round last year. So it's not difficult to narrow down.
Subtweet.
I'm not going to say any names.
Well done, Inspector Clouseau.
I'm not going to say any names. Goes and starts for his team. So he's making third round money, which is not that great. He'd be the first guy taken at his position this year, probably, and make $15 to $18 million more. So the agent makes out, the club makes out, and now they've got a guy that's going to play for that kind of money for 3 more years. And everybody out there says, well, get to your next contract. Well, there's obviously 50% of these guys that never get to a next contract, and that doesn't mean all the rest of them get to one either. So I did go and look it up. Ronnie Harrison's contract, it's a 4-year deal with the Jacksonville Jaguars. He did end up starting as a rookie, had a nice season. I think it was a little bit over $3 million over the 4-year contract. That's $3 million total, not $3 million a year. Whereas there was a safety who went in the first round last year towards the tail end of the first round named Terrell Edmonds, who went for the Steelers. And I think his deal is about $10.3 million or so the difference of about $7 million.
And a bonus difference, a front money difference.
Yeah, so Nick Saban's $15 to $18 million figure there isn't quite right, but there is a substantial financial difference. One guy's getting paid three times the amount of the next guy over the 4-year deal, which both of them signed.
He did say he didn't know the facts. That was him covering his butt for people like you who were going to go correct him.
I'm going to go ahead and pull up Ronnie Harrison's tweet at this point, because that's the second half of this.
All of the drama.
Ronnie Harrison said, coaches get so butthurt nowadays about a kid making a decision to live out his dreams and go pro. Makes me think, do you really care about the success of the kid or how well your program performs? Hashtag keep my name out your mouth. Hashtag Bama. Hashtag Saban. Hashtag God got it.
Hashtag.
So,
I love
interesting,
it.
One of them did mention the other one by name, I guess.
I guess, but yeah. But that's fine. I don't have a problem with Ronnie.
No,
in his mind, sticking up for himself.
Right, and we can parse this down a little bit further. When Ronnie Harrison came out after his junior year, he, at least we were told, had a second round grade. He ended up going in the third round, which is a hazard that can happen. You know, you can be a first round player who drops to the second. You can be a second round player who drops to the third, or even further than that. You can be a third round guy who goes in the first or second round. It's not an exact science. Nick Saban's kind of strategy or his thinking through all this has always been that you want to be a first or second round pick. And if he was projected as a second round pick in January, then maybe it wasn't the worst decision for him to come out necessarily. He was able to start as a rookie, so it doesn't seem as though he was unprepared for the NFL. It just seems as though financially maybe it might have cost him a little bit because he doesn't get as much guaranteed money as those first or second round guys do.
Yeah, at the end of his career, you can sit down, you can total up how much he got paid, and you can speculate at least. Now, there are a million variables. We talked about this. Maybe Ronnie waits a year and he goes to a situation that's not as good as Jacksonville, you know, for him personally. He doesn't start. He doesn't like the coaches, whatever it is.
There's a possibility always that he comes back for his senior season and blows out his ACL in the SEC championship game like Sean Dion Hamilton did kind of late in his senior season and slips to the fifth round as well because you don't get to work out in the spring, you know?
But you can also come back and really improve yourself.
Right.
Jonathan Allen
would be a good example of a guy who did that.
The two things I will say that Nick also said that weren't in the excerpt, but he said, once you make a decision, we support you. You know, it's not a hindsight thing. It's not a we're pointing the finger thing. You know, once you've made it, he was honest about it. He said the best thing for us, once you've made that decision, is for you to go on and do well. You know, that's that attitude. The other thing is, and I do think this is fair to say, all the players, every junior on that team is going to have somebody tell him, man, you ought to come out. You ought to get that money.
He's going to have agents who tell him to do
agents,
that. Perhaps a parent or an uncle or somebody. Maybe yeah,
some,
your parents
some friends,
or not.
Friends,
yeah.
Whatever it is. And he needs to hear that other perspective, too.
Right.
Somebody who has experience with what the long-term ramifications are, whether it's Nick or a financial advisor. But if you don't go and engage a financial advisor, you're not going to hear. And I'm not talking about an agent. And some agents are good and some agents are bad. I'm not trying to get into that. But, you know, unless you get an actuary, you know, that projects all that out and explains the long term versus the short term, then you're not getting that perspective from you know, your buddy from high school.
Yeah. So I wonder, and I don't think that we would ask Nick Saban this question because we have such a limited amount of time with him, and you know, this is by the time that we talk to Nick Saban on Thursday, this will be Saturday's news and everyone will be ready to talk about A-Day. I wonder if in hindsight if he regrets singling Ronnie out like that, although he didn't name him. I think on the one hand, he felt like he needed to have a concrete example as opposed to just talking about the hypothetical of if you do this, if you choose to go out early, this is what can happen. He was able to say this has happened to some guys here before. Maybe he would have been better served if he had more than one example. If he said, you know, this has happened to a guy this year, it happened in 2014. If he was able to kind of spread it out a little bit, then maybe Ronnie might not have felt so much pressure on him.
Yeah, and one more thing, and it did go, I don't know if it went viral, but it certainly got
a lot of attention.
A lot of attention, which wasn't the intent of the question. The intent of the question was about 2019 Alabama team.
Mm-hmm. See, so this is all your fault?
No, it's not. It's not that. But I do realize a little better, particularly at this time of year. There's so many outlets that are so hungry for draft-related content. You know, the NFL, whether it's ESPN, which picked it up, whether it's NFL Network, which picked it up, they are doing blanket, I won't say 24-hour, but blanket draft coverage. And that's a really good 4-minute clip for them.
Yeah.
And a discussion, and they can bring in all their panelists, and what about this and what about that. I do think that's one reason why it got as much currency as it did.
And I also don't think Saban meant it in a negative way. Somebody pointed, I scrolled through the comments because I love drama, but somebody pointed out, like, he literally was saying you could have made more money. It wasn't a dig on his decision, but it's like how the process can backfire. It wasn't necessarily Ronnie as a player individually. I think that might also be why he didn't name a name. It was just an example. It could have been anyone. I don't think it had to be Ronnie.
No, but when you say we had a guy who came out and was drafted in the third round last year, and there's only one guy that fits that category, that's where all the attention goes.
Yeah, but I don't think that's what he meant it. He just wanted Ronnie to be able to make more money. I think that was the whole point of it all. He wanted him to have a better contract, to have a better potential
future. And on the flip side of this, it doesn't take a genius to point out that Nick Saban would have benefited by having Ronnie Harrison back last year.
He would admit that. You know.
Yeah. There's the old joke where I've heard it much more from basketball than from football, where a player who is considering entering the draft early goes to his coach, and the coach says, "Coach, what should I do?" And the coach tells him, "Well, if you want to do what's best for you and your family, you should enter the draft. If you want to do what's best for me and my family, you should stay one more year here."
Yeah, there is that, but at the same time, that does not mean that he's incorrect in what he said about Ronnie's financial situation.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean that everybody... Some people got to have, you know, if Ronnie got $800,000, some people that changes their life. I mean, so
I'd be okay with that.
That's
you never know what the individual personal circumstances are of these guys either. And, you know, Nick Saban can point to the list of guys who had considered coming out after their junior year, chose to come back for their senior year and made money. I wonder if we were to really go through and parse down the list of Alabama players who were drafted after their senior year, if there's guys who looked at coming out after their junior year and didn't make any money by coming back for their senior year. Because that case, you're just playing a year in college for free as well. Maybe you're getting closer to your degree.
But then let's break it down this way. Let's see where Damian Harris is drafted.
Mm-hmm.
Then let's ask Damian what he felt like the total value of his spending his last year in college was.
Yeah. And that also goes back to some of the individual personal circumstances.
He loved it.
He
talked about how much he loved it and how great a year it was.
Yeah.
So
another guy, though, you know, like Jonah Williams, who's already got his degree and
no reason to stay.
Every circumstance is different, but it's hard.
Yeah,
to
I mean,
out.
You
yeah.
you occasionally, I mean, yeah, it's rare, but you occasionally recruit Julio, and you knew
goodbye.
The first minute you watched a field clip of Julio, that if you got him, you had him for 3 years.
Yeah.
That's.
And if you're looking at the team for 2019, there's a good chance you could be having this discussion again in spring of 2020,
based on
whether Tua Tagovailoa, Najee Harris, Jerry Judy, Henry Ruggs, Dylan Moses, or Xavier McKinney, any of those guys chooses to come out, you know?
Right. You would say, using the Julio example, Tua may be the number one pick in the draft.
Yeah.
That's possible. Shake his hand and he goes on, and you knew that was a possibility.
Yeah.
But you'll also have somebody on that team, whether it's somebody you named or somebody else, because who would have sat here last year and said, well, Quinnen Williams and Josh Jacobs, there's a couple of surefire first-rounders.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know how that's going to develop.
Yeah.
I have two things to add real quick. I swear I'll keep it short.
We've got to move on here soon.
I know. One, I don't think Saban regrets it because I don't think anyone has the balls to show him that Ronnie tweeted. And he
I'm sure Saban will hear about it. I'm 100% confident
really?
In that.
Yes. I don't think anyone will tell him that Ronnie went to Twitter.
He'll hear about it.
Okay. But I don't think he'll regret it. He said it with a purpose. And then two, imagine if like football was one and done, kind of like basketball, how this conversation would be going. Because, like, Julio, or not.
I would think they would have a phone conversation.
Yeah, I think they'll probably talk about it. I wonder if Ronnie might be here on Saturday for A-Day. Hey, segue. A-Day.
A-Day.
The worst day of the year.
Come on, Taryn.
I take it back.
Give me the program. Alabama,
you get really bad sunburn.
Alabama finishes spring practice this weekend with the A-Day game. This is going to be their 15th and final spring practice, their third scrimmage. It's free. You guys can all go and watch. It'll be on ESPN2, I believe.
Yes.
We'll all be there. We've been following spring practice throughout. Here's a few things that we're going to be looking for. Big picture, I'm curious to see what they want to work on. maybe defensively, but also offensively. Last year, it seemed like the 8A scrimmage was a little bit more focused on developing the passing game, getting Tua some reps, getting Jalen some reps, getting the wide receivers some time out there. I think part of that is probably standard practice for a spring football game, because you don't need to run the ball 60 times and do ball control offense like that. You don't want to get guys all banged up with a bunch of tackles. But I am curious, since you have a lot more experience coming back with the passing game than with the running game this year, if the coaches decide they need to work on the running game a little bit more, or if that's what they decide to focus on relative to what we've seen in previous years.
It's always hard to know, too, what they're looking for.
You could tell at times last year when it was a one-possession game at the end and the team that was in the lead was throwing the ball on second and third down, you know. Just because, you know, in a game situation, you just run the ball there and take another minute off the clock, but that wasn't what they were trying to do. There, you know, there's not really a scoreboard unless you're eating steak or beans and dogs after the game. So,
yum.
Another thing that I'll be looking for, different offensive line combinations. Matt Womack has been working at guard some during spring practice, but has missed some time with some injuries as well. Jedrick Wills went down with an ankle injury in Saturday's scrimmage. We're going to find out later this week what his status is. Evan Neal, one of the true freshman early enrollees, five-star offensive tackle, really big guy physically, looks like he could play as a freshman, has worked in a little bit with the starting offensive line at guard, and I'd be curious to see if they have one offensive line combination that they stick with, if they rotate a couple of guys in at guard, if they move some guys in and out, what they try and do there, because there will probably be some more offensive line combinations that you see during the fall based on whether Deontay Brown is going to come back after four games or not, based on how far ahead some of those other players are of Deontay Brown, how well some of the tackles might fit at guard, things like that. I think offensive line is always a position that takes a little bit of time to settle down, but probably in this particular case might be a little bit more unsettled than it normally is at the end of spring, partially just because of the injuries.
Yeah, I think, well, at least there's so much time before fall, because otherwise Jedrick Wills' injury would play a bigger factor. But it's like, you have how many months until August? 3 months until August? Math? Without counting on my hands. But I think... Four. Dang. Sorry. So, yeah. But Matt Womack also hasn't been fully participating, so I don't know if he'll fully go out there. Matt Womack. Okay. He's kind of stood by and watched over some of the drills. But I think that's also when Saban said some guys are a little more banged up than others or recovering from injuries. He said that during one press conference, and that doesn't mean they're out. That doesn't mean they're injured. It just means they're managing them and not putting them in like a situation where it could get worse when they don't need to at this point. So, well, it'll be interesting to see if he gets full reps in the A-Day game.
First, I'm interested to see if they spell Pierschbacher right on his plaque at Brian.
I was the one who noticed they spelled Sean Dion's name wrong.
There are about 10 misspelled names over there. We made a big to-do over it, so I think Greg Byrne has proofreaders now.
But I tweeted about it last
Pierschbacher's a tough one. Yeah. Yes, you did. Pierschbacher's a tough one. So
Pierschbacher. Pierschbacher.
Execution, you guys.
There you go.
Yeah. Execute the high level here on the Bama beat.
And then I will be interested to see how the centers play.
The centers?
Mm-hmm.
Chris Owens and Emil Ekior? I'm curious to see.
That's the key to me to the offensive line this year, is replacing Pierschbacher. The other guys, they've got athletes to put in spots.
I'm going to spend a little bit of time watching Alex Leatherwood at left tackle, not because I don't think that he can do it, but just because I think it'll be a little bit of an adjustment for him. You know, he's played enough there as a true freshman that you can have some confidence in him, but that's still a difficult position. And playing against some of Alabama's outside linebackers and guys like Raekwon Davis, it'll be a tall order for a guy who's still relatively young, you know, just going to be a junior and going into his second year as a starter.
It is, but, and then, of course, tight ends. Looks like they've really tried to utilize the tight ends in what we've seen and heard from the scrimmage, the two scrimmages. But who those will be and how that'll work out, that's going to be interesting, too.
Pretty good bet that Miller Forrestall will be one of them.
I think so.
I'll be interested to see if they keep Cameron Latou there in the spring game.
Oh, he'll be there in the spring game. The question is whether he'll be there in fall camp. Also curious to see how high some of the true freshmen have risen on the depth chart. We've already mentioned Evan Neal as being a guy who's gotten some time with the ones. DJ Dale was mentioned after Saturday's scrimmage as a guy who's been working with the ones on the defensive line. Perhaps even less than offensive line, it's rare to see true freshmen play on the defensive line at Alabama. Daron Payne would have been probably the closest example back during the 2015 season, as far as recent guys that I can remember. And he wasn't even really a starter with that group. He was more of the second string, kind of.
Here's a question. Y'all have probably addressed it, and I just missed it in one of the notebooks. What's Jalen Armour-Davis been able to do this spring?
He's been, I believe, with the second team at cornerback. I think he and Josh Shobe are the second team cornerbacks at the moment. We've mentioned this before on some previous podcasts. You could make the argument that defensive back and cornerback in particular is one of the most well-stocked positions on Alabama's roster. You've got Trevon Diggs coming back for his senior season. You've got Patrick Surtain, who's going to be a sophomore, so he'll be around for a couple more years at least. And then Josh Jobe and Jalen Armour-Davis are two really good young prospects. They've got a couple commitments already, some guys who are coming in. Scooby Carter, I believe, who's probably more cornerback slash safety. Not sure which position he'll end up playing, but I think that Jalen Armour-Davis is probably in good position going forward to be a contributor. And defensive back in particular looks pretty good.
When they did defensive back drills on Saturday before the scrimmage, him and Daniel Wright were paired up together, and they went fourth in the line. It was Xavier McKinney, Cheyenne Carter together, Patrick Surtain the second, along with Jared Maded, and then Nigel Knott and Trevon Diggs, and then Wright and Armour-Davis.
Okay.
Nigel Knott will be interesting.
This is the guy who's been here a lot.
Yeah, to make a move if he's making a move.
That was the first time we saw Dale with the first team defensive line, too.
Other freshmen, John Metchie, we've heard good things about during spring. The tough thing for him is just that he's got four really good wide receivers in front of him. There's a chance that he might end up looking really, really good and just torch the second team defense a little bit. Maybe not. He's still a true freshman, has only been on campus since December, but we'll see. And then a guy who's not going to be here, but a guy that I think some people will be looking forward to after spring when he gets here during summer and into fall will be Trey Sanders. Nick Saban's answer last week seems to indicate that they'll be looking for a freshman to come in and help out at running back, and he's probably the obvious choice.
I think so. And then, you know, as soon as you do those lists, people say, well, what about Alfano? You know, what about this guy?
Antonio Alfano has really been working hard every time that I've seen him out there in spring practice. And that's not to say that other guys aren't working hard, but you can tell when guys are going 100% and when guys are going 90%. He looks like he's been going 100%.
And then just eye test, just from my limited time out there, Justin Egboigbe really passes the eye test.
Got to talk about the kicking game. We've talked about offense. We've talked about defense. Now we have to talk about the kicking game.
Everyone's favorite part.
You know, when you talk about the kicking game, you're really talking about kickers, so I don't know why you don't. Don't just ask me about kickers.
Yeah. Kicking game.
Kickers.
Will Reichard will be interesting to see which parts of the kicking game he contributes to during the spring scrimmage. They don't normally practice kickoffs, do they? Or if they do, it's very limited. They usually just put the ball down and play.
I think over in that kicker twilight zone that we never see in practice, I'm sure they practice placement, you know, and height and all those sorts of things. It's not that they don't practice it, and then
but there's such a high risk of injury during some of the kickoffs that I don't think they don't spend a lot of time on.
They don't do much 11 on 11, you know, full speed kickoff return,
right? But you'll have him, you'll have Joseph Bolivas, who can both do place kicking. You'll have Will Reichard and Skylar DeLong, who can both do punts. You will not have Mike Bernier, who's put his name in the transfer portal. So that at least eliminates one possibility for Alabama in the kicking game.
I want that portal. I just want access to the portal.
Okay, anything else we need to talk about here?
No, I don't think so. We've covered a good bit of football until next Saturday when we or next Monday, I guess, we'll A-Day podcast.
Yeah, but maybe we'll come in on Saturday after the game. Maybe we'll come in on Sunday and take Monday off. We'll just see what everyone feels like.
Tua is the starting quarterback. Breaking news.
This is the first A-Day in a long time without a quarterback battle.
Of some sort. Probably Jalen's second year.
Yeah, I was going to say, there wasn't really one going into the 2017 season.
Yeah, probably then. But people always like to watch, and they'll like to watch and see Leah and Paul Tyson and Mac Jones, Lane Hatcher, who we often forget to mention. It'll be interesting to see how those guys, people will count reps and so forth.
I should thank you guys for bumping us over 100 ratings and reviews on iTunes. Once I gave you guys a mark to go hit and a reason to go hit it, because I wasn't going to ask you for ratings and reviews anymore, you guys just went and did it in like a week. I probably should have set the bar even a little bit higher, but we're at 102 right now, and I told you guys I'd go 10 episodes without asking for any more ratings or reviews.
But can I ask?
No.
Can we hit 120?
No. 10 episodes. This is number two since we did one on basketball on Friday. So thank you guys for doing that. At some point, we'll come back and keep asking you guys for more of those. But today is not that day, and A-Day will not be that day either. Thanks for listening, everybody. Until next time, this is the Bama Beat.